Welcome to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at FoleyTom. And the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. Today, we have a different type of guest on, Alyssa Foley. She's, for all full disclosure, she's my niece. And she's in her final semester at school. She's studying to be a nurse. And the reason why she's on the program is because I just wanted to get a different perspective of healthcare. You know, healthcare is a very old network, if you will. And sometimes having a different perspective gives everyone a chance to be more innovative. So, Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about where you go to school and what type of program you're in.
So I'm in the Bachelor's of Nursing program at the University of South Carolina. It's a four-year program. And I am a senior right now, so this is my final semester, and I will graduate in May.
Woohoo! Okay, so I believe you participate in several clinicals at this stage of your program. Tell us about the type of clinicals you're involved in at the moment.
Yes, so the first 2 years of the program are more lecture and classroom based, and then the second 2 years of the program are more hospital and clinical based. So I've already completed a couple. I've been on two different med-surg floors. I've done oncology and dialysis. I've been able to participate in labor and delivery, in pediatrics, and psychiatric care. And then my final clinical last semester was a step-down ICU unit, so more critical care. And then this coming semester, we haven't gotten our placements yet, but it's more one-on-one with a nurse, and you'll get put on one unit for the whole semester, and you work side by side with that one nurse. So it's more individualized learning compared to being in a group of peers.
Oh, awesome. Well, that should be exciting on many different fronts. And I'm sure having those different exposures helped in your grasp of the overall healthcare system and the types of care that are critically needed in hospitals. So, Alyssa, why healthcare? I know in our family, we have a number of different folks that are nurses, radiologists, things of that nature. Why choose healthcare?
I always loved hearing stories about it growing up. But beyond that, I wanted to do something medical information always interested me. But healthcare on the front line specifically, because it gives you a sense of fulfillment. It makes you feel like you're doing something important at the end of the day. I didn't want to have just an office job, you know, filing papers and doing monotonous work. I wanted to actually have interactions with people, make people feel better, do something good. So at the end of the day, even if, you know, your patient's not all the way better, if you at least did one thing for them to get a step closer to getting better, you still feel good about yourself when you leave at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, well, healthcare, there's no better place than healthcare. Healthcare is certainly in need of folks like you. So I'm sure you will be very successful in where you ultimately land. Thank you. You know, and again, healthcare, the nurses are the front line to healthcare. Whether, you know, you've heard a lot about them in COVID, and rightfully so. But in general, whether you're dealing with COVID or anything else, it's really the nurse that is really engaging that patient so much more than the doctor does in a given day. So I applaud you for your focus to make a difference in somebody else's life.
Thank you.
So give us some insights to some of the practical experiences. You've been involved in a couple of different scenarios. What have you learned from that, from oncology to pediatrics, things of that nature? What do you see in healthcare where you think that we might, I won't say do a better job, but certainly areas where there certainly needs to be more attention. Thoughts on that?
Specifically being a student, our scope of practice is limited, so I can't do as many of the tasks that the nurses can. Even though we're learning them, we're not allowed to do them on our own yet. We either have to be with the instructor or just watch them do it. So when you're not the one doing the task, you're often the one talking to the patient, and there's a lot of stuff that you find out about the patient that's not written in the chart that they haven't asked because nobody has the time to ask, quite frankly. I mean, a lot of that has to do with short staffing. It's very different. It's very task oriented. You know, you have to do your meds at 9 o'clock. You have to go to physical therapy and everything's very scheduled. It's not, you just get to sit and have conversations with your patients. Like the nurses talk about how they used to have more time to do things like that. So being a student, you get to be the one that has those conversations with the patients. And a lot of times I've been able to relay information back to the nurses that they wouldn't have otherwise known because they simply didn't have the time to have that conversation. So just more communication and figuring out what's actually going on and not just what's written down in the chart and actually taking time to introduce yourself to the patient to see how they're feeling, to see what their concerns are, and not just, oh, the doctor told me I have to give you this medicine today. That's what we're going to do. And then I have to go to the next one. That's a big problem.
Yeah, communication is the key to success, no doubt. And the idea of, you know, the EHRs are good in many respects, but it doesn't capture the whole person, especially the socioeconomic elements as well. So sometimes it's not just about the clinical side of the equation. It's about the setting in which that patient lives that could be just as detrimental to the state of one's health that would cause a readmit or a recurrence of the situation, or even a delay in the path to wellness. So, very astute observation there. So you're in the hospital. How do you see healthcare in the context of, again, you come at it from a different perspective, you're watching more than engaging, and that's not meant to be critical, but that's your students, to your point, you're more observing. But, other than the communication aspects of it, what do you see as to what we could potentially do differently, even outside of that episodic event of the person's stay within the hospital?
I think that they could definitely work on discharges and discharge education, because a lot of times once the patient's leaving, they're no longer that nurse's responsibility. So they get handed their pile of paperwork and say, here are your discharge instructions, and we'll go over briefly the key points in them. But other than that, it's more or less, good luck, hope you get better. Yeah. Whereas if they took the time, actually, on one of the units that I did work on, they had a specific nurse just for discharges, and I thought that was handled very well because she was able to have more time to just sit and talk about discharge paperwork and discharge education all day long, where the nurses, when they have to discharge their own patients, that isn't always a top priority because they have other things to work on with the patients that are still staying in the hospital. So if you have more time to discuss what they need to do going forward, they'll have better outcomes instead of coming back or being confused or not knowing what their next steps are, or, how to get to the physical therapist or which meds to take at which time and contraindications and this and that. They're not always well enough informed on that when they're leaving.
Yeah. And, we've had several experiences of our own in that regard, but that's where I lean a lot on my experience, but the idea that the patient who is being discharged isn't always absolutely focused on the discharge in and of itself. So they're not necessarily paying attention. As a matter of fact, some stats relative to a visit in a clinical setting, within an hour, the patient forgets 50% of what they heard. So no different, I'm sure, in a discharge scenario. So there's certainly a shift, as we talked about, in that a patient, that's it being in the hospital is an episode. But the value of care, and if we're really truly interested in achieving the best opportunity for that patient to achieve wellness, is that continuous care model, meaning that the home equally is a setting of care. Any thoughts on how better we could engage patients on a continuous basis?
I think using more of the interdisciplinary team of people that can help in the home. I'm actually a home health aide. Besides being in school, I take care of two disabled pediatric patients.
I did not know that, actually.
Oh, there you go. They have a whole team of people that come into their house. They are wheelchair bound. So they have physical therapists, they have occupational therapists, they have speech pathologists that come in, and then they also have a team of people that come in and work on their braces and their sizing and different wheelchairs and equipment in their household. So that's very, it's a totally different perspective than working in the hospital when you're in somebody's house every day taking care of them. But besides people that are just disabled, I feel like that could be extended and used way more often instead of having patients having to go into rehab facilities or longer term care facilities. I think that there could be a shift to having care in their own home where it's more personalized, they're more comfortable, they'll be more willing to do things. And on top of that, it makes an easier transition because once they get out of rehab, then they have to transition again from rehab to their own home, where if you're already treating them in their own home, they don't have to do a second transition and get used to it all over again.
Interesting. That's an interesting point. Yeah. So the home becoming a setting of care is obviously growing in significant momentum. As a matter of fact, there was an article written in Healthcare IT News back in Q4 of 2021, indicating that remote patient monitoring was the new delivery of care model of the future. So I don't believe that it's just remote patient monitoring. I think that there needs to be a coupling of what happens with the face-to-face, because there's a lot of importance in context of that. But there is a greater need to extend care into the home and provide that continuous care model. But you highlighted a point early on, is that we're already short-staffed, even in the hospital. So, and it brings up yet another a statistic in that we have a growing population, an aging population, a population that's getting sicker, meaning contracting more and more chronic conditions as they grow older and live longer. On the flip side of that, we have less doctors and nurses available to actually treat that older, aging, sicker population. So the challenge here in the reinventing of the delivery of care really is focused on, how do we deliver care now with an older age or sicker population with less doctors and nurses? That's really the ability to answer that question is very key. The other stat that I will share with you, I think I did share with you offline, and my audience is going to start to repeat it right now because they know exactly what I'm going to say. You know, the average Medicare patient, I'm in the home, the average Medicare patient, 5 chronic conditions, 9 different doctors. They see their doctors 15 hours out of the given year. So what happens the other 8,745 hours? If we want to get to a value-based care model, we have to do a better job of getting that patient to wellness, but we have less staff to do it with. Even now during the pandemic, staffing shortages for many different reasons are more prevalent than ever. So it's a challenge in and of itself. Any thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely correct. We need more nurses and doctors, but we're already short-staffed. So the easy answer would be just to get more nurses and doctors, but it's not an overnight. You can't just snap your finger and there they are. But I think that leads a pathway into more telehealth, because if you don't have to physically go into the doctor's office, or if the doctor doesn't have to physically make a home visit or see you in the hospital or wherever you might be, they can just log onto the computer and see you then and there. And it's easier. They could see more patients. But again, then people start to feel like robots and you don't get the same face-to-face interactions. You can't do as thorough of an assessment. You know, you can't put your stethoscope on them if they're on the computer. But again, they're older, they're sicker. So for lack of a better term, the older people don't necessarily want to get on the computer or know how to log on and do all that telehealth thing. So that's another barrier to delivering healthcare.
Yeah.
But for the younger populations, it could be very helpful.
Yeah, I hear you. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Virtual Shift. I'm your host, Tom Foley, and we're talking to Alyssa Foley. She is actually, one, my niece, and two, a nursing student at the University of South Carolina. She's on the program because we want to talk about, you know, how, you know, folks just entering into the industry might see the market a little differently, the opportunity a little differently than what we've been engaged in year to date. So the point there being is, you know, with the need to reimagine the delivery of care, sometimes it's not the one with 30 years of experience that we go to. It might be someone that just sits back and able to see the market slightly different. And certainly everyone, regardless of experience, is a contributor to the ability to reimagine the delivery of care. So, Alyssa, interesting point that you just made. You know, for folks that don't know, actually in telehealth, so there is a difference between telehealth. One might argue we're in a telehealth session right now, right? It's video. That's classically how telehealth is viewed. But if you look at it in the context of virtual care, when you talk about providing home care, there is technology out there that in the home, if you have a stethoscope, an otoscope, a blood pressure cuff, you could actually attach that, or so like, let's use a stethoscope as an example. You can be the nurse in the home, placing it where it needs to be, and the doctor on the other side of the internet can actually hear that. So to your point, you know, telehealth is more in the classic video only, is more of a low acuity encounter. But if you look at virtual care, it is the ability to have a true high acuity encounter, leveraging the use of medical devices, whether you as a nurse are with the patient, and then again, the physician is on the other side of the internet, and or the physician, the patient is alone, and the patient ultimately has a blood pressure cuff that they take a measure once, twice, three times a day. They prick their finger, or they have continuous remote monitoring of their glucose and things of that nature. So there are innovations out there that allow for that patient to be empowered to embrace their need to get to wellness, and then also that data. There are models again out there that it's not really the physician that has to observe all the data that's coming in. There are staff available and services available to do that monitoring for them, and then therefore the provider works at the top of their pay scale, engaged with patients that are in the greatest need. That is a very significant opportunity in my view on how we changed the delivery of care model. And I think it was where the healthcare IT news article was going in the context of remote monitoring being the new model of care in the future. And that future is 2 minutes from now because it is available today. Anyway, tell us a little bit about some of the other experiences you've had in your career.
So when I started off freshman year, I started off as they're called personal touch volunteers in the hospital. So we weren't allowed to do anything medical wise. We were just allowed to go. I worked on the unit with mother and baby. So I was allowed to feed the babies. I could help do baths. I could help the mothers walk in the hallway, you know, after their C-sections and do stuff like that. And it just helps you get used to the dynamics. It helps you get used to talking to the nurses, to the doctors, helps you meet people, helps you get used to dealing with patients. So you're not so more or less scared when you go to your first clinical about, oh my goodness, there's a patient in the bed. How do I talk to them? So that was very helpful. And then from there, I was introduced to the manager for the newborn hearing screens on the unit, and there was a job opening. So since she had known me, I'd worked with her on the floor, she offered me the job. So I did the newborn hearing screens, which was a very cool job for about 2 years, and I stopped right when COVID hit. But with that, all you do is you go in and you do an auditory test on all the babies. They test all the babies to see if they're deaf or not, because the earlier they test, the earlier they can treat it and come up with plans to help them out. And that was very cool because I, again, was on the floor with mother and baby. So I got to see a lot of labor and delivery and postpartum treatment plans going on around me, even though I wasn't involved in them. I was just doing the hearing screens. I was still learning something new about it every day, which was a very cool job. And then, like I had mentioned before, I'm still a home health aide for 2 disabled boys.
Awesome. So interesting conversation. So you have one more semester to go. I know you're very excited about that. Define some of your professional objectives, maybe short term. Give me a short term, long term thoughts on what you'd like to do.
So when I graduate, I would like to start working in the ER. That's been my favorite place so far. When I had the externship that I worked with over the summer, I was on an orthopedic med-surg floor, but we were allowed 2 observational days to go to a unit of our preference, and I chose to go to the ER both times, and that was a great learning experience. I got to see a little bit of everything every day, so I would like to stay in the ER for a little while and learn as much as I could and get a solid foundation before I started to move to a different unit. I'm also very interested in labor and delivery, which is more or less the ER of motherhood is what they call it. I like the chaos, the hustle and bustle of it. I like being right in the middle of everything. So ER is definitely where I want to start.
Awesome. Very good. You know, one of the other reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, the program, is, you know, obviously you're a female, and I think that the market needs to do more, a lot more relative to promoting females in healthcare. Now, some folks might say, well, there's a lot of females in healthcare. Yeah, they're nurses for the most part, not all parts, but don't, so please don't get upset with me, Mr. and Mrs. Audience. But the idea here is to get females into more executive roles. So how do we do a better job of promoting females into positions and getting them more involved in maybe informatics and things of that nature? Any thoughts from your perspective? I know you're just coming out of college, but you know, I just thought maybe you had some perspective on that.
So in terms of moving up the ladder, we are not taught much of any of that. In nursing school, they teach you how to be a nurse. They can teach you to be a ER nurse, to be a labor and delivery nurse, to be whatever kind of nurse you want to be, but they never have a discussion of, okay, once you're a nurse, how do you become the unit manager? How do you become the chief nursing officer of the hospital? That's not part of the curriculum at all. So I feel like that needs to start more at an education level so that, you know, we're aware of it, because everybody's in the mindset, I'm going to be a nurse, I'm going to be a nurse, I'm going to be a nurse. It hasn't even, you know, been brought up, hey, would you like to move up? What about going back to school and being a nurse practitioner? What about being the chief executive officer? Anything like that. It's just,
there you go. That's the position you aim for. So that's an interesting perspective. You're definitely a learner and a lifelong learner, I should say. Always have been. Your other cousins might get upset, but you've definitely have been an outstanding student throughout your entire academic career. So I'm very excited to see where you go. I do appreciate you taking the time to be on the program, and I wish you the best of success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care. I would like to thank the show sponsors, both HP and Intel. HP Engage long lifecycle products provide the stability, safety, and security you need, plus flexibility and performance designed for today and tomorrow. As well, Intel would like you to know we're going above and beyond together with new standards for business with the latest Intel vPro processors, delivering what IT needs for performance, security, remote manageability, and stability. And be sure to check out the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And remember, connect or follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, The Virtual Shift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.